Welcome to the Savoy Originals. I'm Alex Zane, and this week I am joined by someone who shot to fame at the ripe old age of 12 when he was cast as the lead in Billy Elliot the musical. From there, he's built a formidable career on stage in shows like Everybody's Talking About Jamie to his recent Olivier Award-winning performance in the musical Titanic. Alongside that, he's appeared on TV in sitcom Bad Education and made a massively memorable appearance on Strictly Come Dancing.
I never took it for granted, but if you tell someone they're a star a thousand times over, if you put them as a leading role in a musical and you've got thousands of people applauding you, of course you're going to have this kind of like, well, I'm fab. Until, the bubble bursts and you're not fab anymore.
Today, we talk about how his own story mirrored that of Billy Elliot, how his meteoric rise to fame was followed by an equally speedy fall, and how he pulled it all back together to be sitting here at the Savoy today. Yes, my guest is the excellent Leighton Williams. That's all on this episode of the Savoy Originals. Now, just before we get started, a big thank you to our sponsor, Laurent Perrier, for making today's episode sparkle. In 2019, they launched something rather special, their Blanc de Blanc Brut Nature, a 100% Chardonnay champagne with no added sugar. It's all about the Chardonnay, a rare and demanding grape that gives Laurent Perrier its signature freshness and finesse. It's used as the majority grape in all of Laurent Perrier's wines, and it's also what sets the Laurent Perrier style apart from the rest. This wine is proof of their mastery, creating a pure expression of Chardonnay that stands out in the world of champagne. So here's to Laurent Perrier and their relentless pursuit of elegance. Cheers!
Clink, clink.
Here's to you, Leighton Williams. Cheers. A true original.
Thank you. Are we having a sip?
Are you having a sip?
I'm not going to have a light sip because I do have a show, so this would be really annoying, okay. But like a little...
Okay, that's it. We both had the
stunning.
The tiniest sip because we're working.
We're working.
So I want to start today as we celebrate your career and the fact that you have been a trailblazer in so many ways by going back to the beginning, because I think you've talked about how as a child, you were already something of an entertainer. You enjoyed dancing and performing, and I love this, how it lifted people's spirits. So my question is, do you think there's a quality you learned back then that shaped the way you approach your work even today?
I think at the time you don't realize you're doing it, but like I was always a natural entertainer anyway. Like if I was in the room, I wouldn't necessarily be like, everyone look at me straight away, but I would suss it out. And when the neighbors around and they just want to watch Coronation Street, but I'm giving them a full performance of something that I thought was more entertaining. So I don't know, it was just always there.
So then tell me what it was like growing up in Bury and this performative element of you, because I think if I'm right, you had 8 siblings.
Yes. So on my side, we had like 4 in my house, and then my other brothers, there's 5 of them. I guess everyone was really loud. I wasn't actually the loudest in my household, which is saying something. So we had some big gobs up in my house, and it was just chaos, but like fun chaos, and everyone was just kind of cracking on and doing their own thing. It wasn't the simplest of like upbringings. There was always something going on. So I got to go on stage for 3 hours and pretend to be somebody else. People call it doctor theatre, and I really do think it is. Like it's such
doctor theatre. Yeah. I've never heard that term before. Doctor theatre is
like healing. It's like therapy. It's like whatever you want to call it, for which gives you some peace or like a space where you can forget about what's going on in the actual real world. You really do lock into this character, and you forget. So all of a sudden I'm Billy Elliot or Michael Jackson or and is that Tina Turner. For quite varied characters there, but that's true.
It's eclectic, but I love it. So is that because you are performing as someone else, or is it because you have to be so focused when you're on stage that there is no opportunity to think about anything else but the performance?
I think there's a bit of both. Like, I mean, people could listen to this like, I've seen you being a bit naughty in the past. Like, I can detach quite well. Like, I can go in and I'm in it, and then sometimes you got to get through 8 shows a week with a little bit of sauce and a little bit of fun. So I'm very good at making other people laugh and then having a fun moment, but like you would never tell on my face.
So wait, what you're talking about here being cheeky is going slightly off script.
A little bit, just not off script, but just a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But when you're on the stage and you go through the whole process, like I played a character called Jamie and Everybody's Talking About Jamie. And that was like, it was like 3 or 4 years ago. So I was still in my late 20s, playing a 16-year-old. Exhausting, but like I remember going on that 3-hour like train. It was just like it would get emotional, and I got to let all of my baggage out. And I just, yeah, that's why we call it Dr. Theatre. I just thought it's a great opportunity to just let it all out and then take your bow and crack on with life.
I asked this because we've had guests on the show who even as kids saw acting as a potential escape from their circumstances, is one way of looking at it, or a way of improving their life or changing things in a drastic way by entering the world of entertainment. When you were a kid, was that on your mind?
It wasn't like a conscious decision. I guess I really did fall into that open audition. So I went to this open audition for Billy Elliot, and there was thousands of other boys there. And then I had to do all of this training. And then when I finally moved to London, and they were like, okay, we think we're going to give you the job. I had nothing to compare it to. So I didn't know how my life was going to change. I just knew that this was way more fun than being at home. No offense, love my family, but like it just was. Like you can't deny it. And people are like, were you homesick? And I was like, not really. Like you took me from my little estate in Bury, threw me in this huge mansion in London with all of these kids that were also doing the same thing as me. Like it was amazing.
I want to talk about this particular story because obviously this is the moment really where it all changed. So I think it was your aunt who saw an advert.
Yeah, my auntie Lisa, she saw the advert in the paper and she was like, come on, let's go. And you know, actually my stepdad just passed away recently, rest in peace Curtis, but he was also there. And he, if it wasn't for him, it's actually his funeral this week. And I just remember like actually there's so much that I have him to thank for, because I really didn't nearly turn away from the audition. Like I was like, no one looks like me here. Everyone's white. Like I'm clearly not supposed to be here. Like I had my trackies on. Everyone's in leotards. They were saying things like portfolio. I was like, what does that word mean? Like it was just such another world. And he was like, basically, get in there. We've come from Bury, which isn't that far, by the way. It's a few stops on the tram, but it was like, you're going in there. And I was just like, oh, fine. And I did it.
What do you think it was that you did in that audition room? Have you ever looked back and gone, was there something I did in that audition room that meant that out of 4,000 hopefuls, it was me they picked?
I think probably subconsciously, I didn't want to look like I was the odd one out. It was so clear that I was. So I wanted to, maybe I was proving to them that like, you know, I might not seem like I fit in this room, but I'm going to show you that I can keep up with you, even if I don't have a clue what a padable ray is. Or an arabesque or a tour en l'air. I'm going to just look at the boy next to me. And they literally quite simply did say, if you don't know how to do these things, just like pretend. And I really did. And I feel like I have been doing that most of my career, quite truthfully. And they must have saw something in me. I think the casting director, Jess, she literally drove straight to Stephen Dolger's house and she showed the tapes and she was like, can we have a black Billy? And Stephen was like, I guess so, if he's good. And they really did invest in me. Like, it took me a good year and a half, 2 years for me to actually get on that stage and make my debut.
Because you'd never done tap or ballet.
Not a single step.
Before, and you went to the Billy Elliot Academy. Because I saw a clip of you on the Paul O'Grady show.
Oh, my gosh. That video haunts me for life because who was I trying to kid? I loved being in that tutu, okay? But society made me believe I was not allowed to wear that tutu. So I was lying, and it's so funny looking back because it was like, oh, it's not for me. And I was like, yeah, it was. You're a liar.
I remember that clip. This is because it's Vernon Kay hosting. Yeah. And then they cut to you showing off all the different costumes you get to wear. And you are kind of like,
oh, that's not for me. So funny now, because obviously I did Strictly and I got to meet Tess and see Vernon a lot more recently. And I say, said to him that was my first ever, like, you know, interview on screen. And now, you know, I see him out and about. I'm like, hey, Vernon. But yeah, that was a time.
Is it fair to say at this stage you were living the dream? You're the lead in Billy Elliot in London. Are you happy?
I'm pretty ecstatic. Like my life is very different to what I knew, but let's just say I accustomed to it very quickly. I feel like this is why the life was meant for me, because lots of people that meet me now, they're like, to be honest, like from the first day I met you, you've not really changed. I never took it for granted. I don't think. I just think it all, I want to say it got to my head, But if you tell someone they're a star a thousand times over, if you put them as a leading role in a musical and you've got thousands of people applauding you, and then you whack them in a TV show and da-da-da-da, like, of course you're going to have this kind of like, well, I'm fab. Until, you know, the bubble bursts and you're not fab anymore.
After Billy Elliot, a brief stint in the Michael Jackson musical, and then, as you just touched on, you nail another audition for BBC Two's comedy Beautiful People, starring, among others, the legendary Olivia Colman.
Just Olivia Colman, cash.
Just casual, right?
That cast is actually unbelievable. And Mira Sayal's in that cast as well. She just got nominated for Olivia Award. I saw her the other week. I've not seen her in, like, probably 10 to 15 years, and we had the biggest hug. It's just so nice to see everyone smashing it. But yeah, that was my first TV job.
Well, I want to talk about some of the incredible achievements you've had, and also some of the struggles. But before we go there, I do want to ask you something we ask every guest, because as we sit here, I want to ask, why do you think you have succeeded where others simply haven't?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. So in life, I've had the doors shut in my face and people categorize me and be, you know, you're in that box, you're in this box. I don't think anybody saw this Olivia coming, including myself. And I kind of love that, like surprising myself, but also surprising others, because since young, my fingers have been in many of the pies, you know, whether it's singing, dancing, acting, like I've always tried to home in on the craft and do it all. One thing I've done is be open to all possibilities, to all different kinds of work. I've not said, I'm a dancer. I did for a little time, and then I was like, well, actually, I don't want to dance so much like that anymore. So, and sometimes maybe people limit themselves in order to get to that next stage, and they categorize themselves and say, oh, but I just do this. And I think in order to potentially be beyond your imagination of success, you need to push yourself and really just like reach for the stars.
Karaoke song of choice?
See, I don't do karaoke.
Whoa. Now you can sing. And like,
yeah, but no one wants to hear someone good sing on karaoke. It's supposed to be funny and like, oh, yay, they can't hit the notes.
Yeah.
What if they can?
That's why I do karaoke.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like not fun. So I tend not to do that.
Okay.
You get it, right?
Yeah, no, I understand.
It's
yeah,
like, because I do it 8 times a week. Like, come and see the show. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't need to hear me on karaoke.
Well, I guess.
And also, if I am rubbish. Even more cringe. Because it's like, you should be good.
Okay, fine. No.
It's, but if I have to, you're pulling my leg, I'll do the Grease medley.
Solid choice.
Sandy, Danny?
We balance each other out because I am shit. Now, it does sound like at the start of your career, it was all unicorns and rainbows. Mm-hmm. And then you lost your scholarship to the prestigious Sylvia Young Drama School. Mm-hmm. Just talk me through what happened at that point. And I wasn't sure which you were reaching for as I asked that question.
The champagne. No, I really don't mind talking about this now because I feel like for a long time I didn't really touch on it. And then I was just like, why am I lying for? I actually made peace with Sylvia Young a few years back. I was doing Jamie, I think, on the tour, and the director is good friends with her. Like, they live close by. And I was on the phone to him and he was like, oh, I just want to pass you on to someone. I was like, oh, God, a bit strange. Like, who are you passing the phone on to? Like, it could be anyone. Sylvia Young. She's like, hello, darling. She just basically says, like, how proud she is of me and where I've come. And, you know, she's sorry about the past, but, you know, it had to be done for what was going on. And I really respected it. I was just like, imagine if you have a child in your establishment who's not really there. He's doing a show. He's preoccupied working, basically, because I was. Mm-hmm. I was there by, you know, morning, a couple of hours, and then I would have to go to work and do Billy. Or I was on set filming. It wasn't, like, my main focus. My focus was the work, not like school. So yeah, I was playing up. I was, you know, the class clown, like I said before. I was just not that bothered. I'm just a normal kid from a council estate who's used to going to state schools that everyone is, this is not naughty. I'm a good at two shoes in my old school, but me in this new private school setting where everyone is a lot more regimented, I just couldn't fit in like that.
I mean, in hindsight, first of all, how much of that behavior and that playing up, for example, do you think was just natural to you, or was down to perhaps because of your success and the fact you were working already in Billy Elliot, was your self-belief in your own talent, or was it perhaps some of the recognition you got going to your head? Because I think you mentioned earlier, you know, having that applause at such a young age can have an effect on someone.
100%. My head was definitely getting too big. I was definitely almost maybe even playing a character. You know, like back home, I was nobody. I was like, I'd made this new life for myself. I was living this kind of weird new life, like, you know, in London, it was so weird. Like, I would have like a different wardrobe to what I would wear in Manchester. Like, you wouldn't see me in my like shades and my fake Louis Vuitton bags and, you know, my Dolce & Gabbana glasses. Like, that would all get packed up, and then I'd go home and I'd have my like trackies that I would wear in the streets. Like, I was doing this kind of like double life, and I'm a young boy dealing with like, you know, being queer, and who am I out to, who am I not? Like, think about it, the whole time up until that point, I've been like playing this other character who was like, you know, straight boy laddie Layton, who's not actually that, but I had nowhere to express myself. I find my way to express myself, maybe I'll go too far. And then, yeah, I got expelled and I had to go. It wasn't a necessarily specific thing. It was just, you know, a combination of things. And I remember having to go to a meeting at Working Title with the Billy Elliot team, and Sylvia Young came, and she literally turned to me in the taxi. She was like, I really hope you can prove me wrong and turn this around, but something tells me that I don't think you will. And she said that, and it stuck with me so much. And I just remember thinking, like, I'll prove you wrong. Like I can turn this around. And lo and behold, a few months later, it was bye-bye. But honestly, I know everyone says this and it's so cliche, but like, that was the biggest kick up the arse that I needed. Everything just got kind of stripped away from me. I wasn't singing anymore. I wasn't dancing. I wasn't acting. I had no one to kind of show off to. I was just like, you know, the boy who'd made it, but now has to come back and be in his normal school with everybody else. And of course, that brought a lot of unwanted attention. And I was also on TV playing the biggest gay boy ever. So it's not even like I could hide in the closet. I was like, well, I guess this is going to be a time.
I mean, do you think it is all on you and the responsibility solely lies with you? Because, you know, is it not the responsibility of a drama school, any drama school, to be able to handle someone in your unique position, perhaps coming from a background that 90% of the people there haven't come from?
I think it was so unique, and them conversations were definitely not being had at that time. And you know, there weren't lots of people like me. Most of my friends at that time, everyone was used to being private school trained, or like barely many of us that had come from like the type of background I had. So we were always just a bit louder, a bit more, but even like the northernness, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't really point the finger really, but I take a little bit of blame myself. I also think, you know, the people around me could have just, you know, said late and rein it in, but listen, maybe I couldn't be tamed.
I mean, it's the story of a thousand movies, someone having to return to their hometown after the glittering lights of success.
I feel like every time I have a podcast, I'm like, this is a movie, you know. Is that really wild? I'm like, who's going to pen this?
you're going to love my last question then, because when we get there. So looking back over, you know, getting the role in Billy Elliot and then moving on to Beautiful People and everything that was happening to you, all the success, is there one person in particular who you can look back and go, without them, I wouldn't be sitting here today? There was one person that helped guide me or advise me or was just there for me in some capacity that has led me to the success I've had.
I would definitely say at that period in time, my granddad was like my like number one rock. Like, of course, my mum was always there, but my mum was going through her like own like just life stuff and troubles. And when I moved away, my granddad was like constantly like checking in and coming down. And, you know, he passed away a good, you know, 6-7 years ago now. But I always am so grateful. Like, even when I had to go back to Bury after all of this madness has happened and trying to fit in, I basically ended up moving in with him because we would come up with these plans and he would help me write letters to schools. And I was just, he understood the passion and like what I wanted to get to. Do you know what I mean? And that's when I started to really lock in. I was like, okay, I need to take this serious and I need to get back to London. It was Operation Get Back to London. And Grandad was definitely like helping me push that.
And it must have been a great, I mean, you say he passed away 6 or 7 years ago, for him to be able to see that, you know, believing in you back then and helping you out, and for it to have all come to fruition.
Yeah, it's nice. Like, sometimes when I do a show, I'm like, oh man, he would have loved this. Or also absolutely been like, well, what is going on? Because he wouldn't mince his words. But yeah, he was there like, really like, number one fan vibes.
Now, as we enjoy this Laurent Perrier Heritage, I'm reminded of their exceptional craftsmanship with Chardonnay. Earlier, we talked about the Blanc de Blanc Brut Nature introduced in 2019, a 100% Chardonnay champagne with no added sugar. Chardonnay is the heart of Laurent Perrier's style, bringing that distinct freshness and elegance to every blend. Their Blanc de Blanc showcases this perfectly, capturing the purity of the grape and the skill behind every bottle. From the light, natural sweetness to the refined finish, Laurent Perrier's Blanc de Blanc Brut Nature pays homage to a single fruit. So, to innovation, elegance, and the Chardonnay grape. Let me talk about what landed you back in London, because when I read about your life and hear you talk about this next period when you returned to London, you're offered a place to stay by one of the producers on Beautiful People and the subsequent decade of living there. This sounds like a very fun period for you, both creatively and personally. What's life like for Leighton Williams at that point?
So I got the call for the TV show that I was doing, Beautiful People, season two. And honestly, that phone call was just like, oh, thank gosh. Because prior to that, I had to get let go of Thrill Alive because my voice broke. So I had no work. I had no school. There was no reason for me to be in London anymore. So it was like, okay. All of my creative outputs were just like gone. I couldn't go to like your normal, you know, after school dance club anymore. Because I was like, I was a professional. Do you know what I mean? Like I was, it just wasn't, it didn't make sense. So I just didn't do anything for months and months and months. And this call to go back to London to film in the summer, I was just like, okay. With my granddad, I was like, this is it now. When I get back to London, I ain't coming back. I'll come back to visit you, of course, but like, this is my opportunity to really turn things around. And it's so funny, at that point, I played Billie Eilish, I played Kylie in Beautiful People. Them stories literally imitate my life. Like, Billie Eilish, Northern Boy, moving to London, going to the school. Beautiful People was about, you know, this queer boy and his best friend wanting to move to London to live amongst the beautiful people. It's wild because it literally was like exactly what was the parallels was happening in my life.
So Val and Maria, you moved in with them. Who were they in your life?
I remember the exact moment I met Maria in Pinewood Studios, and she was the line producer on the show, and her wife, Val. They were amazing, beautiful lesbian couple, and they were looking to bring in a young kid into their home just to help with life. And I just so happened to come in at the right time. And I was looking for somewhere to live because I was starting the new college at Italia Conti, or school. And they took me under their wing and they let me move into their house at the age of 14. And I was living in this new, beautiful, queer household. And it was just like a match made in heaven. Two lesbian women, white women, me there, like, mixed-raced gay child. I think the street was like, what's going on here? But like, we just were like, we were happy and it was fab. And I was really, really grateful for that time. I think at the time, I didn't realize how lucky I was to land this amazing opportunity. But I guess I just needed them people to trust in me as well. Like Italia Conti, Maria and Val, like without kindness and love and compassion from a lot of people, I definitely would not be where I am today.
So you were looked after then, because I know it's a trope, isn't it? Like people talk about child stars, people who hit the limelight at a very young age, and then it does implode for them, whether it's because of them or because of the people around them not looking after them properly. Was there an awareness among the adults in your life to look after you and make sure that didn't happen to you?
I think from that point onwards, Maria and Val was so screwed on with like bringing me up and, you know, just... There were certain things that I just was not aware of, even just to the point where, you know, if I started to earn my money, they were like, okay, well, if you're working on the weekends now, you should be contributing, things like that. And I, compared to what it was like beforehand with some of the chaperones that I used to have, oh my gosh, it's like, girl, why are you looking after children if you hate children so much? Like, why would you do it to yourself?
Really?
Like, it's some, yeah, I won't get into that too much because, Lord, some of them are still alive. But it was just like, painful sometimes, because I know I was a bit of a pain in the ass, but I'm just a kid. Do you know what I mean? I had one chaperone turn to me once in the back of the Billy Bus. You know, I'm literally training to be this role. And she was like, you know, if I was a casting director, I would never have casted a black Billy. Wow. Why would you say that to a kid? Do you know what I mean? So I dealt with a lot of that. But once I kind of moved to London and came, you know, lived with Maria and Val, I felt like all of my differences were like my superpower. So that was nice.
And at 18, you were cast in Jack Whitehall's hit sitcom, Bad Education, Stephen Carmichael. So you've described this as your breakout role. Do you remember getting the call? Do you remember what the experience was like? Was Jack Whitehall in the room?
Well, no offense, Jack Whitehall was not really Jack Whitehall then. Like, he was obviously popping and doing his thing, but like, I had to Google him. Do you know what I'm saying? It was a long time ago. Yeah, so that you get this email, you know, you get called up to the office when you get an audition at Teleconte, and your name's on the board, and then the whole school kind of knows, like, your name's on the board. I'm like, yeah, I'll go upstairs. Then you make your way up to the 9th floor, and then, you know, they tell you you got an audition for this. Da, da, da. And I remember going to my first audition, and I went in my school uniform because I was like, well, might as well give it a method. And by the time I think we started filming, I was in college, so it took like a year or so for us to get it like together and, you know, pitched and commissioned and all that. I think it was such a long process. I can't remember them actually saying absolutely yes. I just remember thinking, no one is taking this role from me, because every time we'd go back for another read through, they'd like switch out a different character for somebody else and they'd get bumped out. And I think the only three that were like there from the very beginning was me, Jack Binstead and Nikki Runicles. Everybody else did some like rotations. So luckily we kind of made it through. And yeah, I mean, even looking at it now in hindsight, it's like, I never thought I would do the show, have a 5-year break or whatever, and then do it again. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But yeah, Jack, respect him so much. Like, so grateful for him to give me that call again all of these years later and being like, do you want to take the reins on this? But it was a time, I think, because theatre is very much so like, there's 1,500 people watching you tonight, that's it. But with a show like that, it was one of the biggest comedies at the time. Like, people were seated. So it definitely changed my life for the better.
And you're 18 now and you're in this huge show. You're back in London. You are living your best life. I mean, you did describe going back to Bury as a kick up the arse. So did you feel kind of like more mature now and having gone through that, you know, you're grounded, I guess, is the word.
100%. Grounded, I knew my way around a set because I'd done it before. But this time I had a bigger role, had more responsibility. So I stepped into it being like, okay, I got this. And the movie was like the icing on the cake, of course. I felt like a professional actor at that point. Do you know what I mean? The first time you do a show, you're like, oh gosh. I remember literally being like, what do I do? And they're like, don't look at the camera. Imagine that's your only note. So I said, okay. And then just cracked on. So this time around, I remember like with Jack, when I was like, oh, Jack, oh, will you send me the script before the read through? If I can just do like a little edit. Because love Jack Whitehall and Freddie Seiborn's a bit who created the show Bad Education, but you know, they were two straight white boys. They didn't know how to speak like me. Do you know what I mean? So I was like, we don't say, you know, one year it was work, next year it was slay, the year after that it was like iconic. Like, there was always a new word that we would throw in, which is what the gays and the girls were saying at that time. And then lo and behold, you know, all these years later, that actually gave me an opportunity to write a script for myself, which is mad.
Fantastic. And that's great that, you know, they were so open to obviously, you know, improving their own writing
100%.
With authenticity from you.
Yeah. And I remember that when it came around to do Bad Education for like, I think it was the fourth season, but with me and Charlie leading the show, I just was like, if there is any chance, please, can I be in the writer's room helping create the characters? And if my dialogue is going to be heavily featured, I'd really love to just be in it in some capacity. And they were like, oh, like 100%. So that was a nice new little string to my bow. This is what I mean. Don't limit yourself. I barely scraped my GCSEs. My English teacher, she must have been like, what? You're writing scripts now? Yes, baby.
Well, that leads me nicely onto this next question, which is something we ask all our guests, because you have traversed the entertainment landscape. You worked in musical theatre, TV and film from a very young age, often bringing unique takes on familiar roles. With all that experience and knowledge that you now have, what do you think it takes to be original?
Ooh. I've actually just, for the first time in my career, like, well, almost 20 years, been the original in London, hence the recognition from the Oliviers. Because when you're not the first, that's not necessarily the case, but whenever I've gone into something, I'd almost want it to feel like it's the original and like reshape it and do it, and feel very lucky. The directors, choreographers, creators that I've worked with have always been like, yeah, like make it your own. Even if it's the songs, like John McCree is one of my best friends. I'm meeting him after this. He was the original Jamie. I can't sing like him. Just really being comfortable in your skin, knowing that you can deliver something and I'm really making it my own. I feel like I had a knack to that, a hope.
And it sounds like doing an original take on something, there is some form of collaboration where 100%. You go, I'd like to do it this way. And, and it's only through working with the right people who do give you that space to make it yours that you can do that, as opposed to someone who goes, this is how it's done.
This is it. And I know a lot of shows do that. It's like you stand on number four, you say the line like this. And on that note, you lift your arm and it's if it works, it works. It's absolutely fine. So with this role in Titanic, playing the iceberg, I remember seeing it on Broadway. I was like, iconic, loved it. But of course, I was like, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-bum. I was like, can we try this? Can we try that? From the costumes to the wigs, like they've got the Tina Turner wig maker from the Tina Turner musical to make my wig, but just icy blue. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, let's do it. Like, if we're going to do it, let's do it. And I think maybe it's because people can see that I actually genuinely care. Like, if I didn't care, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, like, it's fine. I care about like the end product just as much as you. Maybe sometimes too much, but like I'm going out there and putting myself out there 8 times a week. I want to feel comfortable so I can really like give the best performance that I can.
I do want to talk more about Titanic, but just before we get there, a quick sidebar. Because in 2023, you appeared on Strictly Come Dancing.
Yes.
Just out of interest, what made you want to appear on that show? What was the driving force? Was it a profile-raising exercise? Was
yeah.
it a desire to just do it?
Do you know what? It wasn't my desire, if I'm being completely honest. Like, you know, these things just come to you and you get that call and you're like, oh. I was actually in shock, to be honest. I thought, can I really do that? Like, isn't that a bit naughty? Like, I said to my agent, I was like, you do know, they know I can dance, right?
Right.
And they were like, yeah, but we've had lots of people on the show before that can dance, like da-da-da-da-da-da. So I thought, probably not had as hard a choreography since I was 12 years old. So I was like, why not? To millions of people, dust off the dance shoes and give it a little go and have a good time. And the representation for me and Nikita was something that I definitely wanted to do. So I thought that would be great. And also I knew that I would be able to like really switch into the masculine and feminine vibes and not necessarily do, you know, there'd been same-sex couples before me, but I thought maybe I could be the first to really like push it to, you know, a different level.
Because you did, you switched who was the lead often halfway through the, mm-hmm. the dance numbers.
Yeah, I mean, also just like, sometimes I was like, I want to stick a wig on. Mm-hmm. I want to stick that dress on because it's fun for me. At Halloween, you are not stopping me from putting a frock on. I'm so sorry. Halloween is Halloween. And I'm do it anyway, so might as well do it in front of millions of people and Strictly Come Dancing.
You say, I mean, like you say millions of people, and you're absolutely right. I mean, that is a show. It's a stick your head above the parapet show for anyone. Were you prepared for the level of scrutiny that was going to come your way? And I guess to a certain degree, it's worth touching on the negativity that came with this notion that, oh, Leighton's a dancer. Yeah. Like that's
That got very boring really quickly, and they still do it now. And I think it's just something that is going to happen forever. Like the first season of Strictly Come Dancing, you had someone like Claire Sweeney, who had been in just as many musicals and as many dance classes as me. We went to the same theatre school. Get over it. It's always been that case. It showed me that if I can put my mind something like you, it's when people say it's one of the most amazing experiences, like it truly, if you get it right and all of the pieces of the puzzle come together, it really can be a magical experience. In fact, I'm dancing with Nikita again this week. Can't get split us up now.
And it was your decision in the end. Because I just wonder, you've been in the industry for as long as you have at that point by 2023. When it comes to a big decision like that, are you making it on your own? Do you have people guiding you, going, like actually looking at it pragmatically and going,
truly,
Strictly we'll do this, but it could do this?
Oh my God, like legit, I had all of my team, you know, PR, you know, digital agents, acting agents, everyone. We were in the boardroom at the office of Curtis Brown. We had like pros, cons, and I was like, okay, so this could happen, this. And I was like looking at people's careers that had done either Strictly Come Dancing or Dancing with the Stars, because he also had like, what's she called? Zendaya. Mm. People don't really remember, but like Zendaya was eating up Dancing with the Stars back in the day. Obviously, this is a bit of a random one, but Kim Kardashian, she's not exactly not killing life. You know, might not necessarily agree with what she's doing, but there's so many people that had done that show and continued, like Clara Amfro, AJ Adudu, their careers are like soaring. And I was at a point in my career where I was like, I could just carry on doing it, but I just wanted to remind people what's good. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm still here, because I was in the era of like, you know, yes, there was social media and things and stuff like that, but like I was coming up when all of that was happening. So like, I just thought, let me just rise the profile a tiny bit. And I'm not afraid to say that, because that's literally why people go on there. Business. And obviously they didn't exactly pay me a tenner. So like, I was like, I'm from the streets. I'm going to get some cash. And it doesn't matter if you get kicked out first or second, you still get your check. So Les Dennis, you ate that. I always say Les Dennis was the true winner, because he said deuces and he probably got paid more than all of us.
So you do Strictly, and how does that affect the kind of work you're being offered afterwards because of the profile raising exercise that it did? And how important is the decision of the first thing you do following Strictly?
That is the ultimate question, because, Lord, I was getting offered some madness. To the point where I was like to my agent, I was like, is this, are they okay? Like, but fair play. Like, if you're hot at that moment, everyone is just wanting to, like, you know, get you in, or you're the guy that's just been, it was hard, I'm not going to lie, because I love money. I want money. I wanted to, you know, pay my mortgage. I very much so like find it hard to say no to things, but I know that like the stepping stones in where I wanted to go, I had to really just like, I was like, it's going to come, it's going to come. And to the point where I almost gave up and just was like, okay, maybe I should just say yes to this and do that. Cabaret. In the West End, that was my first job that I did after it. And what a first job to do, just to show people, yes, I can, you know, be thrown around on national TV in sequins and a cheeky little heel, but this is what I do. Like, Eddie Redmayne was playing it on Broadway when I was doing the West End. That was just like, it made Strictly, the decision of doing Strictly, worthwhile. It's like, yeah, that was meant to happen.
Let's continue with the stage then, because we've touched on this, but let's really get into it. Huge congratulations. Best Supporting Actor in a Musical for your role in the comedy musical Titanic, which is currently on at the Criterion Theatre in the West End. Now, let me get this straight. It's a retelling of the 1997 film Titanic from Celine Dion's perspective. Mm-hmm. That is correct. I mean, I'm sure that's reductive.
It sounds crazy when you say it like that, but honestly, you have to see it to believe it. Like, I think the biggest shock for us all was just like, I guess it wasn't a shock because we know it worked in other countries, but you never know, like you could be the first time to do it in London and people aren't checking for it. But, you know, I saw it off Broadway a couple of weeks before I began, and I remember thinking, this is going to go down well, I think. And it's basically a comedy concert. We sing all Celine Dion songs and we tell the story of Titanic, but in the most hilarious way ever. And honestly, people will be stopping me in the streets and just being like, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Like, thank you for like the 2 hours of pure joy. Like, I just, it's complete escapism and people crying laughter vibes. It's just, it's so nice to be able to make people laugh. And this was not the show I thought I'd be getting my Olivia in. I tell you that much. Like, even just announcing that you're playing an iceberg, first of all, it's like, pardon. But this iceberg, she sings and she dances and she throws it down. And my agent kind of put it to me and was like, listen, of course it's this role, it's epic, but it's kind of a nod to your, everything that you've done in your career, the stepping stones to this moment. And this is the first time I've ever been eligible to have a nomination, because I've never been an original.
It's amazing. I saw the video of you when you first discovered on the street, being very emotional about the nomination. Mm. It clearly means a lot to
so
you.
So much. And actually, I was at Marie and Val's that day when I got the call. So I was back in the home in London where I'd grown up and, you know, found myself as a young man. And they'd really put so much love into me to get to where I was in my career. And to have that phone call whilst I was there was really special. And calling everybody and just, like, thanking everybody, I guess, for, like, the belief, the time, the effort, the sacrifices. My mum was crying at work and, yeah,
Well, congratulations again. I used the word trailblazer at the start. I'd be interested to know, do you feel it with your career and coming from the background that you had, do you think through what you've achieved, you've opened doors or at least offered a vision for people who might think a career like yours was previously untouchable or unattainable for them?
I've never really thought about it like that. No, I haven't had a leg up in this industry. I've kind of had people believe in me and, you know, help me get to where I want to go. But I always say it in my, I do lots of dance workshops and things and try to teach as much young talent as possible. And I have a company that does that. And I say to my students, I'm just like, if I can do it, you can, honestly, because the odds were truly against me. Queer black kid from where I was from with not much access to many things. You know, I stumbled to my acting classes at a young age and that kind of spark, I don't know, right time, right place, just don't give up. I've auditioned for things and they've said no, and then 3 years later they're calling me. So you just really do not know. So I would like to think so. Yeah, I hope so.
We do have some quick fire questions coming up, but I did promise you, we started talking about your life and the story of your life earlier, and I did say that the final big question I was going to ask, because as we sit here in the Savoy in 2025, having talked through your life and career, it really honestly does have all the beats of the perfect movie biopic. The early success, the collapse, the move home, the second chance finding your place in London, weathering public opinion. It's all there. When you look back across your career at this point, it's a twofold question. First of all, how do you feel right now and who would play you in the story of your life?
Right now, who would play me? Obviously me. I ain't dead yet. Is that cliche to say? Is that cringe? I don't know. But I'll be booking myself at this point. But I'm really happy. This has been an amazing few weeks. I've really been sitting in the joy of this nomination and enjoying doing the shows, along with my incredible cast, by the way, who also got nominated, and Lauren Drew, my co-star slash star of the show. I'm really trying to not take any of these moments for granted. You know, I'm working towards the next project, whatever that might be. And yeah, just enjoying it and taking life seriously, but also enjoying life just as much. Work hard, play hard vibes. This summer, I want to be outside. Let's just say that.
And yeah, I think you've said before, when you're working, you have to be on. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure when you're not working, it's an opportunity to just...
to let the hair all the way down.
Three quick fire questions to end our interview today. So we've made our way through a tiny portion of your achievements today. But what is the piece of work that you are most proud of that you've done?
Billy Elliot. It will always hold a special place in my heart because without that, I wouldn't be here.
Tell me the most valuable skill that you've ever learned through your work, the one that changed your way of doing things.
To know your worth. To know when to say yes, know when to say no, and know it might be hard, but that opportunity is not something that you need to do right now. You know, a bit like holding out for cabaret, it's going to come.
Love the pros and cons board in the office. I think that...
Oh my God, it literally was a thing, fully.
Right, finally, can you give us one piece of advice that you would tell someone else wanting to follow in your footsteps?
Life is not a dress rehearsal, so you definitely need to go out there and live it. But remember, you want to do this because you enjoy it. I first started performing because I loved it, not for the checks, not for the fame. So long as it's like truly something that you love in your heart and the end goal isn't to be, you know, famous or anything like that, I think you're on the right path. And then if it works out, slay.
Leighton Williams, once again, congratulations on your win. No. It's been a pleasure talking
to you.
Thank
you, you too.
Today, thank you so much.
Therapy session. That was lovely.
And that is it. Thank you to our producer, Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, to our sponsor, Lauren Perrier, and of course, to Leighton Williams for coming in today. We'll be opening the Savoy's Little Black Book again soon to welcome another celebrated guest and ask them what it takes to be a true original. Until then, follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye-bye for now.